former wideout Dede Westbrook, filling the vacancy created by former Sooner and current Giant Sterling Shepard quite nicely. When you watch him, what stands out to you on film?
Jay, it stands out that he's the best receiver in America.
With a 110th pick in the 2017 NFL Draft, the Jaguars select Dede Westbrook, wide receiver, Oklahoma.
Finds the deep ball from Westbrook.
Dede Westbrook back deep for the Sooners. In from his own 29. Watch out. Westbrook. He's got great speed. Dede Westbrook has taken this one to the house.
They're going deep, and Westbrook is open on the money. Touchdown. What an answer.
That is every safety's nightmare, being left one-on-one with the most dangerous wide receiver in college football.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Monday to you. Brought to you by Wild West Guns of Gold. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank Field. John Osier from Jaguars.com along the way. We'll be along here shortly as we get ready to kick off another week. Tony, hope you had a good weekend. Everything good?
Yeah, everything's good.
The heck are we doing, man, wearing the same shirt today?
It happens.
You know, we've got how many freebies to choose from? Not to mention, occasionally I buy my own shirts. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the station provides us with great station gear that looks really sharp, and I think this was this the latest one that we got this year. Was this the Guggen Open?
Yes,
shirt?
This was this year's shirt.
The 2017 Guggen Open shirts. All you Guggen Open players out there, if you're wearing your golf shirt today, you're in synchronicity with the duo right here on Jaguars Today. It's royal blue with the 1010 XL 92.5 FM logo. Tony, we got the big 10th anniversary party coming up, a specialty broadcast from over at the Homestead on Hogan Road. That's coming up on Friday. Friday is also the day that I become the father of a teenager for the first time. You know, I started thinking about that the last few days. Is my son going to have this radical personality transformation? Because he's a pretty chill kid up until this point. I haven't had too much angst or otherwise. You know, he doesn't give any back talk. He listens to his mom. He treats her well. Mm-hmm. I mean, he gets good grades. I don't know what else I could want out of the kid right now. I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop, I have a feeling.
Yeah, I know. I can remember parts of my teenage years dealing with my parents, right? And I can also remember when I grew out of it and going to my parents and sitting them down and saying, look, I'm sorry.
I never had that conversation.
I did. I sat them down. I was like, I know. I was just, I don't know what was wrong with me, but I apologize.
Oh, I declared myself an existentialist, and I swear to you, I used to you know, get into these philosophical, my mom would say, do this, and I would say, what does that mean? oh, my gosh. You didn't want to have to put up with me. My poor mother, the saint that she was, God rest her soul, really, I gave her a hard time because I was you may have noticed I like to argue about everything.
Sure.
Right? And that hasn't really worn out over the years.
You start doing that, and your parents just say, well, just wait till you have kids.
And it's right. Like, and I'm like, and my sister was the same way. You just wait, because she's got three girls, and you know, my son, I don't want to say he's the perfect kid, but he's perfect for me. I mean, I'm sure everybody loves their kid, you know, the same way I love mine. And he's just really, like I said, really a chill kid. Turning 13 on Friday. That's a big one. Speaking of youngsters, Tyler Devitt's back in the fold.
Hello, guys.
Off. Hello, Tyler Devitt. How was would you call Indiana? That's not really the Midwest, is it? Or is it the Midwest?
Oh, I'd say northern Indiana is the Midwest. Indiana's kind
it
of
is,
a weird
okay.
state. If you're in northwest Indiana, you're definitely considered in the northern part or in the Midwest. But if you're in southern Indiana, some people down there consider themselves a part of the South. And I think that's a little strange. But no, I would consider the Midwest, yes.
Interesting. Like the Mason-Dixon line doesn't bisect the state or anything like that, right?
No. It's weird how certain parts of the state say that they are a part of the Midwest or they're part of the South. It's a weird setup that Indiana's got, but yes.
So what did you do on your vacation?
I was back for a week, and two of the days I went up to Chicago, saw the world champion Chicago Cubs, who are playing some bad baseball as of late.
Yeah, say that as often as you can right now. Get as much use out of that phrase as you can, world champion Chicago Cubs.
I saw Kyle Schwarber, potentially his last game as a professional Cubs baseball player. He was sent down the next day. He was hitting third at Wrigley, and the next day he was sent down to Iowa, so not a good start for there for Kyle Schwarber, but no, it was a lot of fun. Spent time with some friends. Obviously, went back the whole purpose of the trip was to hang out with my dad, so that was awesome. Got to see him for the yearly visit. So it was a great trip all around, which the Cubs could have won both games I was there, but they got the split.
All right, well, that's good. Sounds like you had some good family time.
I'll be seeing the Cubs 3 weeks from today.
Are you going up to Atlanta for that?
Yes. I wasn't going up to see the Cubs. I'm going to see the Braves. They just happen to be playing the Cubs.
I think I might also be there, so I might see you there, Tony.
But I will be up there. It'll be 3 weeks from today. Yeah, that Monday night.
You guys should wear the same blue shirt and sit together.
We'll coordinate. Now, I did listen to one day's worth. I didn't listen to the whole week. I was on vacation, but I did hear your guys' your interview Friday with the mayor, Lenny Curry, and it was an awesome interview, about, 20, 25 minutes uninterrupted with the mayor.
Yeah, it was fun. That's Tyler Devitt's been chasing that one, and he landed the fish for us last week. He was working even on his vacation. I think that was his way of subtly pointing out that even while I'm away, I make sure I take good care of Jaguars today. But we did appreciate Mayor Lenny Curry joining us. We did have a good time. If you missed that conversation, go to 1010XL.com and check out the on-demand section, and it's all right there. John Osier has made his way in. Did you not get the memo?
Did your mommy's dress you this morning?
His mommy dressed me. My mom's passed away, but his mom dressed both of us today. She laid out the shirt for me. Said, do you like this one? I think it looks good with your eyes. So, yeah, that's what I
Twins,
went with.
Twins, I like that.
Yeah, well, you know, and I said the second he walked in the door. You know, in fact, when I put this on, I thought, Tony's going to wear this one. I really just had a feeling because we have so many of, you know, similar style ones anyway.
Yeah.
So.
I grabbed a red one and then went to the blue.
Yeah.
Something.
Should have went red.
Gravitational pull. Would have been better. He looks better in the blue than I do. What can I tell you? How's your weekend, John O?
Awesome. I didn't get a shirt, but
We didn't get them this weekend. We've had these for a while. That makes you feel even worse.
Yeah, it really does. It was good. I didn't do very much, but I'm not planning to do very much for the next few weeks. And then I'll start swinging again.
Those are the nice kind of weekends. I love those do not much weekends. I had the family in town, my sister, her husband, and one of my nieces. So that was good. But I worked a little bit this weekend and happy to be back talking a little Jaguar football today. Speaking of swinging, today we're talking about the Jags striking out over the years. Historically, Dan Hicklin was talking about Cliff Averill.
Right.
And, you know, from a sense of what the Jags needed at the time he became a free agent and his local roots, it made sense that he would come here. But why would Cliff Averill choose to, at that point, when it was just the beginning of the Gus Bradley rebuilding era, when he had a chance to go to play with Seattle, it was already a contender at that point in time.
Yeah, and there's a lot of those from that. I get a lot of questions about 13 and 14, why they didn't sign certain guys. In fact, it was a topic in the Ozone over the weekend, and you know, they did a lot of things then building toward now that they knew they weren't going to be able to get certain guys. Older guys were not going to come here and be part of such a massive rebuild. Was it worth it? And I think in the next couple of years, or really this year, to me, is the last chance for that sort of 13 and 14 for you to say that, well, maybe that eventually begot this, if you follow me.
Right, even though the timeline may got pushed back a little bit.
Right, because it did allow young guys to get in the field. But this is the year those young guys have to be good.
Yeah, come into their own a little bit. So today we're going to take a look at, among other things, over the years historically, if there's one that stands out or a few that stand out to you as Jaguar fans out there, of free agents that the Jags pursued and struck out on that you're really coveted for this team, like the one that got away that really still sticks with you to this day. I mean, several people have already put Olivier Vernon as a nominee in there. And I think that's, you know, look, they've been chasing pass rush for a while. And others have said, you know what, I felt like we missed out on Olivier Vernon, but it's offset a little bit by getting Calais Campbell. Well, in terms of a pure pass rusher, I think Olivier Vernon is more what you're looking for. Calais Campbell may be a better fit eventually, may prove to be. We don't know. It looks like he's going to be a big part of the locker room culture, you know, heading it in the right direction.
Calais, sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that looks like a winner. I don't know that Vernon wouldn't have been just as good, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Right. Personality wise and all that. I don't know how he would.
Right.
He could have been just as good, right?
Yeah. And we don't know yet. It looks very much. I think Calais has a chance to be one of the better free agent signings that I've been around just by what he seems to bring. But he hadn't been on the field yet.
Exactly.
So we'll see.
Yeah, we got a ways to go before we get to that. So we'll do that today. Dede Westbrook had an autograph signing out in Oklahoma, so there was a couple write-ups about that. He had a couple of interesting quotes. So we'll take a look at what his potential contribution is to the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2017. You know, he's kind of like that thing that I don't know how you describe it, just something you don't count on
right.
making a major impact that does have the potential, a guy who does have the potential to have a major impact on this team this year. But I think it's best if you're, you know, I think from the team perspective, they may have goals for him to reach. But I think, the realistic perspective is a lot of rookies, no matter where they're drafted, no matter how talented they are, come to this league and struggle initially. And here's a guy at 180 pounds. Let's see if he can get off the line of scrimmage in the pros.
Well, I look at Westbrook. Anybody who's listening to me knows rookies, I always sort of temper the enthusiasm. Fournette, that high should contribute. Everybody else, we'll see. So a guy like Westbrook, I don't want to say anything he gives you is a bonus, but if he can give you a big, scary play, meaning scare the defense play once every few games and start the defense thinking about him, that's a pretty significant contribution as a rookie. I think he can do that.
Because that scary play may lead to two or three other plays for other players on that team.
Yeah,
right?
And this team, you know, obviously needs guys who can stretch the field. Marquise Lee can do it. We think Fournette can do it at that position. And when I say stretch the field, I mean a guy who, when he touches the ball, you're not surprised if he takes it to the house.
Sure.
They don't have enough of that. If Westbrook can start showing that he might be that this year, if he can do it a couple times and get you excited by midseason, I think that's a heck of a first half of the rookie year. And then we'll see what happens the second half.
All right, if you want to weigh in today out there in the listening audience, 641-1010 on the phone lines are always open to you, and the text line driven by Duval Ford at the same number. You can hit us up on Twitter today at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at John Osier. And the question of the day, once again, which free agent over the years that the Jaguars pursued and struck out on did you want the most? Which one left you feeling the saddest that they were not able to land them here on the Jacksonville Jaguar roster? If you'd like to be a part of the program, you can do that. And also hit us up on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. On a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Osier, live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I'll tell you what, Tony, by the time our fantasy football show rolls around this year on CW17, which it will, we're coming back on CW17. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be called Your Jags Fantasy Football. I think Fantasy Football This Week, maybe what we're going with this year. I may be the most prepared drafter, at least in the state of Florida, not in the country. There's one guy out there that has like 450 leagues already under his belt. Think about it. 450, and it's June.
It's 450 too many.
That's not 450 too many. All right, I've got 65, so I'm doing pretty well. But
you're a mess right now. You're over there worrying about DeMarco Murray.
Because I'm stuck in the middle of the second round on my second pick after taking Odell Beckham in round one in this particular one, and I just don't want to take DeMarco Murray there. If you take DeMarco Murray, you feel like you got to get Derrick Henry, and then that's
thinking the same thing.
That's like two picks in the first six rounds for one position. What good is that?
I don't know.
Doesn't seem as efficient as it could be, John.
No, you're right.
Do I go Doug Baldwin really here? Is this too early for Doug Baldwin? These are the things I worry about that keep me up at night. All right. So anyway, that's my life. But we'll totally be prepared by the time September rolls around, and so be listening for that. Let's take a vote right now on the Jaguars and Alex Mack and his pursuit of their pursuit of Alex Mack, because a lot of people have mentioned that as the guy that they swung and missed on. Did they really swing and miss on Alex Mack?
Well, by the letter of the question, I would think not. I mean, they went after him. I forget what year it was. 14, was it? That they went after him and did everything within their power to get him.
Signed him.
Right, signed him, and then it got taken out of their hands because the Browns
had the right to match.
And then 2 years later, now could you make the argument they should have pursued Alex Mack in 16 and didn't?
Yes.
That's a different question.
Yes, you can.
But they didn't pursue.
Right.
So they didn't really strike out.
It wasn't like Atlanta beat them out and outbid them for Alex Mack. The Jags said, all right, 2 years older, we're not going down that road, which I think was a mistake. But look, if you want to put Alex Mack as a guy, because
he's fresh in the mind. It makes sense that that's what people would say.
They made an effort to sign him. They didn't sign him. I mean, they signed him, but they didn't land. He didn't play for the team. So they didn't get him on the roster as much as they pursued him. So you could make the argument they should have offered him more. It made it harder for Cleveland to match that offer.
And the one that does stand out is Vernon. I mean, they went after him, obviously, hard. They got into the bidding war.
Apparently, I think offered more money.
Right. And then at some point had to say, we can't offer any more because it's not going to work. So they swung and didn't hit that one, and that is one that got away. By the definition of your question, it makes sense.
Another recent one is Devin McCourty, right, who they made a big pursuit of. In fact, and he said, without naming the team specifically, made it pretty clear that there was one team up and coming felt made a really strong effort and was very impressed with what they were doing. And really, it was a tough decision, but he ended up staying with New England and winning.
My interpretation of that was, and everything you heard, was that they gave the best possible deal they could to McCourty and figured out that it didn't matter what they were going to do. New England, that wasn't going to work no matter what they did.
Right, but that was, so that's a swing and a miss, though, isn't it? I mean, if you pursue a guy, right, and you put an offer and he's willing to at least engage you on that level, and you're unable to, I guess, if we look at it as you were unable to bring him to the roster for whatever reason, it's a strikeout.
It's a miss. I mean, probably it's a miss where the pitch was too good.
Could have been.
But
right.
Yeah.
I mean, you might have been. You
but
might
still
have been,
a miss. Sure.
Right. You might have been, no matter what you did, barring paying him quarterback money or something absolutely ridiculous, you were never going to get that guy.
Right. He's a guy that's, I'd go back to Aeneas Williams. Way, 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 way back. But they were in on Aeneas Williams, and he decided to stay with who was he with at the time? He was with the Cardinals.
He played with the Cardinals forever.
And then moved on to the Rams at the end of his career.
That sounds right.
And but
he ended Steve Young's career, by the way. He was pretty sure it was Aeneas Williams on a blindside blitz that Lawrence Phillips failed to pick up, and Aeneas Williams crushed
all kinds of
Young
Jaguars.
And gave him all kinds of would-be Jaguars involved in that one.
But, I mean, he went up in the Hall of Fame. So
it's funny you mentioned
him.
He's
been a good player.
I did a show yesterday with Brad Hopkins, former Titans offensive lineman, on NFL radio. And they have on the End Zone, they have Gil Brandt on every weekend. And I'll get to Gil Brandt's thoughts on the all-time running backs because I know that was a sore spot among Jaguar fans that Fred Taylor couldn't find his way into the top 27 when Ezekiel Elliott's already in there.
Yeah.
but Gil was talking about measuring players by advanced metrics. And, he knows I'm from Jacksonville work here. And he brought up Tony Boselli, and he was talking about Boselli and, how he had put together a package a couple years ago for Dan Edwards that, just detailed all the range of things you could measure Boselli versus all these Hall of Fame linemen. And Boselli topped out ahead of everybody, ahead of all of them. And he said the same thing with Aeneas Williams. He said, when you look just at the numbers in his, what he gave up per play and things like that, he graded out better than Deion Sanders, which is shocking. He said he thinks without the advanced metric stuff, never would have had a prayer to get into the Hall of Fame. He kind of breezed into the Hall of Fame because people are becoming more accepting at looking at, that kind of analysis as valid instead of just the eyeball test.
He was also a guy when he played, I assume the voters who were there at the time were probably made up of a lot of guys who had been around the league when Aeneas played. When Aeneas played, it was generally accepted that he was in that top two or three group and was elite. But the advanced metrics said.
But when you play for a perennially losing team, which they were throughout most of their career.
Still had to wait 5 years.
Did he?
Yeah.
Was it that long?
Yeah.
Ago?
I mean, he retired. I'm looking now. He retired in 2004, got in 2014. So he still had to wait the 5 years. That's a guy that he's an eight-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
That's a guy who had to wait 5 years probably because of the team that he played for.
Right, gets into pretty lofty numbers.
Yeah, 55 career interceptions, which is a boatload in any era.
And I did just rewatch that hit on Steve Young.
Was it Lawrence Phillips? Did Lawrence Phillips miss a block on that?
Yeah, it was disgusting.
Yeah, and that was it. Now he got the concussion, and I don't believe he ever played again after that.
Yeah, like it was a hit that I think in today's NFL, just because how it was completely clean, but it was so violent looking that it might have drawn
they would have
flag.
Flagged him. Yeah, right. Find him.
Like
flagged
it was
him.
That kind of hit.
Now I
that was
did
98, right?
I believe you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, because the Jaguars played him early in the season and blew him out, the Niners. And then I think it was a couple weeks later.
With Steve Young?
Yeah, I mean, memory doesn't serve me that well, but it feels like 98 or 99.
It was 98 or 99. It may have been 99 because I remember, it's funny, I remember talking about fantasy football. The first ever Dynasty League I played in, where you keep all your players from year to year, started, I want to say in 2000, and Steve Young had suffered the concussion, and I drafted him really late on the chance he might come back and play one more year, and he never did, obviously.
Should have taken DeMarco Murray.
That's how I should. Well, he was like in third grade,
right?
Something like that. I should have had the foresight to take DeMarco Murray. It would have made a much easier decision. I brought up with Gil Brandt because, Gil, you can go to NFL.com. And or just Google Gil Brandt, top running backs of all time, something like that. And he did a ranking of the top 27 running backs of all time. And most of the guys ahead of Fred Taylor on the all-time rushing list are in. A couple of exceptions. I think Edgerrin James is not. There may have been one more who's not in there as far
that
as that goes.
Retired, yeah.
That
because
right.
Like AP, I think, is ahead of him.
Right.
Frank Gore is ahead
right,
of him.
Right. Most of the guys who are
ahead of Fred
Frank
are
Gore
in the
was not in the 27 list. These were not all Hall of Famers. Some of these guys are active players. Like Adrian Peterson, for instance, is on the list. Anyway, he ranked them. And the thing about Gil, he's at least seen most of these
sure.
guys play with his own eyes,
yep.
you know. And so everyone's entitled to their opinion. But I said, you know, Gil took a little heat in Jacksonville. I think Pete Prisco got into it with him on Twitter as well over the
that was
lack
the
of inclusion.
I think Pete got into it with
Was it the O-line?
O-line? Yeah, because he was like, Baselli's better than 12 of these guys.
Oh, was that what it was?
And Gil
okay.
came back at him with, well, I saw all of them play, did you? Is how the back and forth with that one went.
Which is interesting for how much he praised Baselli.
Yeah.
On the show yesterday. Regardless, he put Jim Brown in the number one spot, which just about everybody would do, right? And so he had Jim Brown. I said, that, you know, Gil, it's interesting, the guy you think is the greatest running back, who probably knows a little bit about running backs, consistently said the greatest running back every year he played was Fred Taylor in the National Football League. Jim Brown was probably Fred's most ardent
Absolutely.
Supporter out there. Just said, this guy, you guys do not appreciate what Fred Taylor is capable of doing, the size-speed combination.
Yeah, one of the most underappreciated players of all time.
Yeah, and now Gil said, look, if I re-ranked it again today, I'd probably make some changes. He left it at that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's always hard because every fan base has their guys that they want in there. But it's tough to come up with 27 that are
better than Fred. Right. Like, I look at Jerome Bettis. He made a ton of Pro Bowls, right?
Yeah, I would never put Bettis over Fred.
I wouldn't either, right? And he averaged like 3.9 yards per carry right. in his career. He was very durable for what he did. 8 1,000-yard seasons, I want to say. I think Fred maybe had 7.
Right.
And, you know, so they're comparable in that regard. But who did you fear more?
Right.
I mean, maybe you feared Bettis in the fourth quarter if you're a linebacker and you're worn down.
I can remember looking at this not too long ago, too. I want to say Jerome Bettis only scored like 10 more touchdowns than Fred. I mean, it's not like he was that much more productive from even that perspective.
By the way, happy birthday, Stacey Mack. Just saying, it is his birthday today.
I have to go look again.
That's 19 of Fred's TDs right there. At least in a two-year period,
yeah.
Stacey Mack took
Fred
19
TDs. Fred had 80 rushing touchdowns. Jerome Bettis had 91.
So comparable.
Yeah.
Right? And certainly Fred was pulled at the goal line a lot relative to feature backs. You
right.
know, I guess Barry Sanders was a little bit as well. I would think Sanders over 100 touchdowns. So
he could look.
He scored a lot from distance.
Now, I only
he scored 99.
I know that when I was covering the Colts, Fred Taylor stopping him was obviously the key when they played the Jaguars, and he was the guy that they feared. Henderson and Stroud were the guys that they feared on defense, meaning you had to get those guys blocked because you had to keep them out of Peyton's throwing lanes. Fred Taylor was a guy that I got up there in 2001. They didn't play that year, but then in 2002 they started playing. And it was always Fred that when you talk to coaches on the side, they'd go, this guy's the real deal. I mean, you must stop him or this team can beat you. And you would hear talk about, boy, if this guy was in our offense, what could he do with the threat of the pass they have?
Oh.
I mean, it was, I don't want to over-exaggerate, but they talked about him in hushed tones. He was that sort of ability of, wow,
and
this guy's the real deal.
Not that 11,000-plus yards is anything to sneeze at, but
right.
Maybe he'd be pushing 13,000 if he doesn't have basically a lost season during the prime of his career, right?
Sure.
Where he played parts of two games and that was it.
Right. And I only covered Fred 98, 99, 2000, and I left for Indy. 98 was his rookie year. 99 was this, I think he lost like 7 or 8 games that year because of an early injury. In 2000, when he came back, he missed the first 3 games because of an off-season knee injury. And then he reeled off at some point like 9 straight 100-yard games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my personal experience doesn't make a Hall of Famer, but I've never seen a running back dominate a season, be as great as he was for those 9 or 10 games in that third year. That was the year that he wound up with like 1,350 yards rushing in 13 games. And it was one of the years where Fred missed the Pro Bowl because of circumstance, meaning if the Pro Bowl had been voted on 2 weeks later at the end of the season, he probably makes it because he got hot at the end of the year and was dominant at the end of the year. But when they actually voted for the Pro Bowl that year, there were guys ahead of him on the rushing list, and he was one of maybe 3 or 4 guys. I thought he was the best back in the league that year. The numbers didn't show it until the end of the year.
Right.
And he had a couple of seasons like that. We've talked about that before. He had a couple of seasons like that where he had the 4th best numbers, and LT and Priest Holmes had these monster years. It's like, well, he wasn't quite.
You think
but
about John.
Over the course of time, he was clearly an elite back.
LT, Priest Holmes, Larry Johnson, Terrell Davis,
right, Johnson had
Edgerrin James,
years,
Clinton
right.
Portis. I mean, these guys were having monster campaigns. And Fred would just
Edge in 2000, for example, is one of the years you're talking about. The year I'm talking about, Edge ran for 1,600 yards. And at the time, Edgerrin, before his knee injury, was a meteoric back. I mean, he was absolutely as good
He's
as there was.
He's outstanding.
And he hurt his knee, became a different back, but when he was young in his first 2 years, you know, I can't put Fred over him in his first couple of years. He was that level.
Right, and so I guess you could argue that if you're going to be an all-time great, you've got to rise above your contemporaries.
Did Bettis?
But, I don't – you're probably right. Well,
right.
I mean, he made a lot of Pro Bowls when you compare it to Fred. So if you're basing it on that, but he also played in either a huge media market in L.A.
Or
he played in Pittsburgh with – you know, the all the history and then comes with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, as
well, and
you
a
say,
team that was in
team.
The – right.
Right.
I think if Bettis doesn't have the storybook ending, which, you know
– walking off with a ring.
Yeah, I wonder – those sorts of images and those sorts of stories, I think, do matter when people get in the room.
And look, it's not to say a guy who ran for 13,000 yards, which Jerome Bettis did,
right,
was not good. He was an exceptional player. If you were taking a guy and saying, let's put this guy in our offense, which one makes our offense better? Certainly, there's a style of play that Jerome Bettis lends himself to. But in terms of, like you said, striking fear in defensive coordinators in the meeting room, Fred Taylor didn't take a back seat to too many.
Well, and Fred could get you 4 or 5 very routinely, but he scared you because he could get you 90, as he did.
Right, he got you 90.
90 yards!
And he'd average, because Brad Hopkins threw Eddie George in there. I said, man, take your 3.8 yards of carry out of here.
Well,
I don't hear about
for a couple of years, Eddie George was really good, but
not
I don't think
he
had the career over the long term to Fred. I mean,
I'm with you.
Yeah.
He was homering up a little bit there.
That's fine.
His former
played with him
there.
And Brad's a good guy.
Hey, I like to, when I've got the opportunity, I don't always have the opportunity to put the some Jags in the all-time category because I don't know how many people are defending them nationally. I take the opportunity to do it when I can. All right, we got to take a timeout here. We'll come back. Let's take a look at Dede Westbrook, what we think he can do for the Jags in his rookie campaign. We'll tell you some of the quotes that he had in his story. He just had an autograph signing out in Oklahoma. That's why He's a little bit in the news. Somebody did a write-up out in the Midwest on him, and we'll tell you what he's thinking as he prepares to play his rookie campaign in the National Football League. 641-1010, the phone number, and it's also the number for the text line driven by Duval Ford. Question of the day asks you, which free agent did the Jags pursue and strike out on that you wanted the most over the years? Not just recently, you can go back all the way to the beginning of the franchise if you want to. Hit us up on social media with your answers to that as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Osher here with you on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. Jaguars today on 1010XL.
This is the quarterback here, Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today rolls on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. We're live at EverBank here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. We'll get to the phone lines here momentarily. Somebody on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, said, hey, I think you're thinking of Bettis. Mostly as a Steeler, early in his career as a Ram, he was a home run hitter. You could argue in his rookie year he was. He averaged 4.9 yards per carry and had by far the longest run of his career, which was 71 yards. Next 2 years, he averaged 3.2 and 3.5, and people were wondering if he was kind of a flash in the pan. Right. And then the Steelers got him, and
yeah, when they made that trade, it was not a no-brainer that he was going to be great with the Steelers.
No.
It fit because he was a power guy going to Pittsburgh. It made sense logically.
They took a chance on him.
Yeah. I mean, I think people assumed that he would be pretty good. I mean, that it would be a good fit. But it was not like they were trading for Adrian Peters. I mean, it wasn't that sort of, yeah, absolutely, this guy's going to be elite.
Tony put it the best a moment ago when we were talking about it on the break. It's not that we're saying Jerome Bettis is not a Hall of Famer. Saying that Fred is.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
If Jerome's a Hall of Famer, then Fred's a Hall of Famer. That's basically, and Edgerrin James is a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at those numbers, that's a guy who is worthy right. of being inducted into the Hall of Fame, and I think it'll be easier for Edge to get in because of the offense he played in. I think it's going to be really hard for Fred Taylor to get into the Hall of Fame, and it shouldn't be as difficult as it's going to be for him to get there with how great a player
yeah,
he
Bocelli
was.
Yeah, Bocelli will get in before Fred. It's still going to be an uphill climb for Tony. I mean, Tony, this is a good year for Tony
mm-hmm.
because of the field, and it helped raise him up to more prominence in the front of people's minds. But you look at some of the guys coming up, it's going to be more
tough.
Every yeah. year you potentially add two or three guys that you have to consider as first-time inductees, and it pushes everybody else down a peg. 641-1010 is the phone number. Joey on the west side going to lead us off this week on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Joey.
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
Good. What's up?
Good. So I had a question. Crazy. Fred is so close. He's teetering on the edge of the Hall of Fame. Every expert that they talk to and whatever, I mean, you hear so many guys just like rave about the guy's talent. And I remember watching him. He was unbelievable. So I have a question. If 99, the Jags win that game and go to the Super Bowl, Fred runs for 140, scores a couple times, and that's the only thing different in his entire career, is he a Hall of Famer right now? Does that change the course of what happens in his career as far as his notoriety, the respect he gets around the league, maybe some more Pro Bowls? Does that one game maybe change?
You know, that's a good point because it wouldn't change his total numbers very much.
No.
But it would, at the time, people would have been, Fred Taylor, on the biggest stage.
Absolutely.
You know, coming off the 62-7, and then they beat the Titans, go to the Super Bowl, and he runs for a buck 40. Then all of a sudden, everyone is... He's on the front of everyone's projection to make the Pro Bowl, right? And once you're there and you break through in recognition, it makes it so much easier to continue.
Well, it would have changed that, and it would have, when people were talking about him in the voting process, there would have probably been an MVP of the Super Bowl and a memory, which matters. One of Fred's issues, I think, once he gets into the room, or, you know, when he's being discussed like this, and probably Tony's issue too, which is a little different with linemen. For people who are voting, there's not really that a lasting memory that they automatically remember. There's the 90-yard run, which was amazing, but I don't know if people in the Hall of Fame room and who are voting for the preliminary stuff necessarily remember that as an image that is driven into their NFL experience. If you follow
that stuff happens in the postseason.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the reality.
Imagine if he outplays Marshall Faulk, right? Even though they're not playing against each other, if he outplays Marshall Faulk on that stage,
right.
if nothing else is different, then you have a direct comparison in front of everyone's, you know, prying eyes.
Absolutely.
And I do believe that without even changing the seasons that he had, to Joey's point, that now you have an expectation of Fred Taylor as this level elite player. And then when it's a close vote, some of those Pro Bowl votes go his way, and maybe he makes two or three more Pro Bowls with the same exact numbers that he has right now.
That's reality, right? I mean, look, if you look at the NFL, 2 years ago, people may have said Tom Coughlin's the second-best coach in the NFL because he's the only one that's beaten Bill Belichick. If Tyree doesn't make that catch, if Mario Manningham doesn't make that catch, is Tom Coughlin any less a coach?
Right. No.
If those guys don't make that play, but he probably wouldn't be talked about that same way because they did make the play. Fred Taylor didn't get the opportunity. Fred Taylor ran for 110 yards in that AFC Championship game on something like 19 carries. I mean, he was really, really good in that 99 Championship game and didn't get the ball enough. And it's been a regret. Tom Coughlin's talked about it, that they went away from it too early. It's not Fred's fault that they weren't playing in a Super Bowl, but the Super Bowl stage matters, playoff stuff, that stuff matters.
Tony, we brought this up when the Patriots won their fourth Super Bowl. If Russell Wilson hands it to Marshawn Lynch, or if he throws a touchdown, did Tom Brady do any more or less? Now, he's a four-time Super Bowl champ as opposed to a three-time. Now, of course, he's a five-timer. But at the time, right? I mean, he wins his fourth, and nothing about his performance, it was out of his hands whether he was going to get a fourth ring at that point or not. It was at the one. I mean, you couldn't have it more out of your hands in football terms.
If Wes Welker makes a play, is Tom Brady any less the quarterback because Welker dropped it?
Right.
You know, I mean, but that stuff. Look, Tom's obviously got all that stuff going for him anyway.
Yeah, he's done enough.
Right.
He's probably getting in.
It's these other guys. It's these fringe guys that when you don't have the. We talked about Aeneas Williams having to wait 5 years. Dude, that guy was a great player. He was one of the best corners in the league basically for 12 years while he was in the league and still had to wait 5 years because he played for Arizona instead of a team that was making deep runs in the playoffs every year. It's a reality that these guys have to face. Unfortunately, and Tony Baselli and Fred Taylor, as great as they were, they weren't great Jaguars. They were great players. They are all-time players, and they're going to have to wait in line behind guys who got to go to that stage, had those opportunities to be on that stage.
All right, if you want to get in, 641-1010 is the way to do it. Maybe a guy who we'll be talking about 1 year down the line, hopefully will be around. I hope, I'm speaking for myself now. Hopefully I live long enough to see the entirety of his career. You know, you never know. Dede Westbrook, a fourth-round pick by the Jaguars this year.
Going south in a hurry.
I don't know. I mean, you never know. Nothing's promised to you, John. You could walk out and get hit by a bus today, for all you know. You know, you still know. So anyway, Dede Westbrook had an autograph signing out in Oklahoma, and it was interviewed by one of the local papers out there, as you would expect. And so some quotes making the rounds, and he talked about, you know, the difference between college football and the pros. And I'm quoting here, the fact that you have to go out and practice hard each and every day. The playbook is huge. It isn't like college anymore where pretty much everything is guaranteed as far as the scholarship goes. Regardless if you're a draft or not in the NFL, they can you can get cut or they can release you, he says. They have both options there. Am I reading too much into it to think that Dede Westbrook, as the Biletnikoff Award, to the soon-to-be Biletnikoff Award winner, Heisman finalist, may have coasted occasionally in practice out there? Or am I reading too much into that?
Well, who knows? Maybe a little. But there's definitely a couple weeks ago, Fred came in on Jaguars.com Live and was telling the story about, I forget if he was hurt early in his training camp practice, but he was literally, sometime in his rookie year, he said there was a circumstance where he was in the training room almost or perhaps in tears thinking that he was going to get cut because he wasn't on the practice field. And he said later, he goes, I really didn't realize what kind of leverage I had being a first-round pick. That wasn't going to happen.
Right.
But he said in his mind, he's a rookie. He doesn't really know what we know. I think when they get here, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, this is the real deal. This is real life. I need to step it up.
And don't you think that this is indicative as well of the culture change that we're seeing here? You hear a lot from Coughlin and Marone specifically about, you better be available. If you're not available to us, you're no good to us.
Right.
Right. And, you know, so there's that pressure that I've got to be out there. Right. And he missed some time, you know.
Fred bought it in 98 because he was in tears.
Right. Sure. Fred, and that's a top 10 pick whereas Dede Westbrook is a fourth-round pick with some off-the-field baggage that he carries in. So we presume right. that it would have to be catastrophic. I can't imagine the circumstances that he'd have to be as bad as he'd have to be on the field
sure.
for him to not make this roster. It's almost a mortal lock. Yet still, I think it's good because I don't think the players have felt that over the last few years. I'm sure there's been competition and all that, but it's always been focused on the positive. I think a little negative reinforcement, you know, it's swung the other way. And who's to say that's not the right way? Because what we've had over the last few years certainly didn't work.
Yeah, I mean, if Dede Westbrook believes that there's a fire under him, then there's a fire under him.
Dede went on to say, and I thought this was a little bit interesting as well, at the end of the day, we all know what I'm capable of. Of course, the expectations are high for me. I set goals for myself, and I want to obtain them at the beginning of the season. In other words, I think in his mind, and I hope this is the case, he's saying, you know what? Best receiver in college football. You just got the best receiver in this draft. I'm coming in here, I'm winning the starting job. That's my expectation for myself. Otherwise, what expectations are you earning by the start of the season other than a playing time type situation?
Right.
And he went on to say that, you know, at the end of the day, it's whatever role they want me to play,
right.
you know, which kind of backs that up. But like in my mind, hey, I'm the top guy on the whole depth chart. Forget it, you know, and you should feel that way, I think,
yeah,
if you're a talented
and
guy.
I think what's interesting is you get the idea, and he was out there so little, but it sounds as if they expect him to be outside at first. So that slot receiver role that everybody assumed he's going to play, I will be interested to see in training camp where they actually have him, if they have him outside, if they think that's where he's best. I think long term they think that's where he might be best is on the outside. So what
do you envision that being, John? If they're able to work out deals with the guys that they want to retain, maybe is it Robinson and Westbrook with Lee in the slot? Is that the ideal scenario for them going forward?
I don't want to be wishy-washy on this because I like having an answer. I really don't know on that. I think so much of what we're talking about with receivers is going to depend on the first 10 games of this season. I assume A-Rob's going to be one of those guys.
And when you say the first 10 games, why? Because they're going to start to decide who they want to...
Well, I think with these guys, you've got A-Rob and you've got Lee coming up. So I think you want to figure out... Right now they haven't approached or we haven't heard about them approaching either of those guys because it's a new regime. They want to see what it is, how they're going to fit. I don't think you want to wait until after the season to at least reach out to their agents and say, we're going to make something happen. You know, and you can wait until after the season, but through 10 games, if Marquise is what we thought Marquise was last year, okay, you give him 10 more games to show it that it wasn't a fluke. You've got it going. Now you can sort of reach out and start getting something done at the end of the season. Remember a couple years ago, they redid Sendarek, I think, and redid Roy right at the end of the season. Teams do that with guys once they see it. They don't want to let them hit free agency. They don't want to let them hit that off season. And you quietly sort of reach out in December and get something done. Wouldn't surprise me with these 2014 guys, Linder, Robinson, Lee, if that's what they're doing, is sort of waiting to see how it fits into this regime.
You got to be careful how you play it, though, right? Because once you get 10 games in, guys start thinking, all I got to do is make it through six more games healthy, right? And I'm going to hit a big payday
right.
in unrestricted free agency.
Yeah, I mean,
potentially.
At that point, you're going to have to pay to keep them off the market. At that point, I don't think they mind paying to keep them off the market if they've shown what they can do.
Understood. Still, you know, you get that close, you wonder, well, I can always get this from these guys. You know, are they going to think that way? What would somebody else be willing to pay me as well? And you can't fault them. And it's a short career in the National Football League. You got to maximize your earning potential. We will come back with this Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Osier here with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, let's give you a little bit of what happened on this date in football history. June 26th through the years, mostly birthdays, significant ones at that, including Shannon Sharp, one of the best tight ends in NFL history. Born on this date in 1968, he's 49 years old. He was a seventh-round selection by Denver, the 192nd player taken overall, would go on to make 8 Pro Bowls, 4-time first-team All-Pro, 3 Super Bowl rings, because he got one with the Ravens as well, got those two
at
Denver.
Savannah State, right?
Savannah State, that's right. Small school kid, made good, Hall of Fame inductee in 2011. Mentioned it was his birthday earlier. Happy birthday, Stacey Mack. We happen to be talking a lot about Fred. I endeared myself to Fred, one of the first post-game broadcasts, by talking about how many touchdowns he would have if it were not for Stacey Mack. Well, Stacey Mack in 2001 and 2002 combined rushed for 9 touchdowns each season and had another receiving touchdown. So 19 total TDs that you figure the lion's share of those on another team would have gone to the lead back, and Fred's totals would have been a little bit more impressive. But Stacey Mack turns 42 years old today, and also born in this date in 1980. Michael Vick, the first pick of the 2001 NFL draft by the Atlanta Falcons, a 4-time Pro Bowler, of course, missed the 2007 and 2008 seasons due to his suspension for the dogfighting scandal, went to Leavenworth, served a prison sentence. Now, as far as I know, he's like a promoter. He's going to play in this flag football league, at least the inaugural game of this new professional flag football league. Still only 37 years old. Michael Vick came back, played at a near MVP level for the Eagles in his second year with the team, his first year starting with Philadelphia. One of my favorite little anecdotes I remember reading about Michael Vick years ago, this is probably when he was at Virginia Tech, and they were talking about what a phenomenal athlete he was. Whatever neighborhood he grew up in, I think it was in Virginia, he was playing with the kids in the neighborhood. His mom went off to work. It was summertime, and he's got a tennis ball, and he's throwing this tennis ball over this 3-story apartment building. I mean, completely over the building. And so the mom comes home, and a guy in the neighborhood who's been watching this transpire throughout the day says, "Boy, your son has got a hell of a right arm." She goes, "What are you talking about? My kid's left-handed." He had been throwing it with his right arm over the apartment building. Of course, is a left-hander and was known as having one of the strongest arms. This kind of shows you, it reminds me of stories of Randy Moss back in his high school days. They said Randy Moss was like picked up bowling like this and was nearly one of the best bowlers you've ever seen overnight. Was great at everything he tried, basically, and must be nice. Michael Vick, 37 years old today, and that is for today, this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Minnesota Vikings are standing behind wide receiver Michael Floyd's claims that any alcohol that's in his system is there as a result of him enjoying some kombucha tea. Floyd has just 5 days remaining on his 96 days of house arrest, apparently enjoyed a few bottles of the tea while watching a movie at home, and says that he was completely unaware that the drinks contained any alcohol. It's also served at the team facility. If you don't remember why Floyd was on house arrest in the first place, he was arrested last December after being found asleep in his vehicle at the wheel with a blood alcohol level of 0.217. Floyd has a court date in Miami to find out how the situation is going to shake out. Archie Manning shared an interesting nugget over the weekend. According to Archie, Miami Dolphins head coach Adam Gase reached out to Peyton late in the season last year. Gase texted Manning after Ryan Tannehill was lost for the season with a torn ACL in week 14. The text saying, quote, "Hey, 18, Tannehill went down. I think he's going to miss some time. The first question I'm going to get at the press conference in the morning is if I'm going to bring you to Miami, what do you want me to tell him?" To which Peyton responded, "You tell him I could probably come play, but there's no way I can miss carpool the next 2 weeks."
Okay. He's got his priorities in order, at least.
At least, yeah.
What is he going to do next? That's been, kind of some of the speculation after this story came out. You know, oh, by the way, what is Peyton up to kind of thing? Is he going to be the front man for an ownership group, or, does he want to try to even be more hands-on than that? Does he want to try to run a team? I don't know. What do you think, John? I mean, you've covered him for a number of years. How do you think his next phase will end up?
I'm a little surprised that he hasn't turned to broadcasting for a year or two, just because I think he'd be the highest paid automatically.
He could have been Tony Romo's. He could have had that spot, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think he could have had anything he wanted on that front, and if Tony Romo... If Tony Romo draws eyeballs, you know, what's Peyton going to do? I mean, you know, but now it seems like because he hasn't done that, it's not going to do it this year. I'm assuming that's not something that he's interested in, because there's no way if he made a call, he'd get the gig. So I've got to think it's ownership at some point.
Oh, wouldn't that be the best soap opera ever? All right, get Romo out of here. I'm ready to come. We'll dump him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that ship has sailed. So
Romo, go take Cutler's job.
Right. I never thought that he would coach. I think he'd be a great coach if he ever wanted to do it. But it's just
be like Magic Johnson, man, right? When Magic tried to coach the Lakers. You're so great, and you're so demanding. How could anyone live up to the Peyton Manning standard?
Yeah, but Bird did it, and Bird was okay. You know, I mean, it
better
can be
better
done.
Executive than coach, though.
Yeah, he coached for a little while.
I know.
And, you know, but
he won a Coach of the Year, didn't he?
Did he?
But yeah, I get your point.
I think anyway.
It's hard, and I think especially with Peyton, it would be especially hard because it would be hard for the people that he was coaching to live up to the work ethic. You know, to work as hard as he did in terms of the off-field. We've all seen the stories about the off-field and, the dedication to time put in, preparation. I just think it would be hard for players to match that. So I think it's going to be front office.
There was in one of the stories I read this weekend about that story that Tony just did, I forget which Colt it was. He was named in the story, but he said...
Say Colt or Colt?
Colt.
Okay.
What do you think I said?
Colt? I said Colt.
Colt. What are the...
Colt.
C-U-L-T.
Oh, no. Colt. Colt. No.
The Colt which of Colt Peyton it Manning. Was.
Okay. No. That's good. No, it was which Colt with an O, which player, which former teammate of Peyton's, put it that way, said that basically he ran the show to the extent that some of the examples he gave, one of them was at the Super Bowl. It might have been against Chicago. Could have been against New Orleans. Whoever it was, Bill Polian said, "All right, we're not going to have a curfew." Peyton said, "Oh, yes, we are." And this is according to one of the players on the team. So I take his word as accurate. He goes, "Guess what? We had a curfew."
Yeah.
I mean, whatever Peyton wanted. Peyton said, "We're doing this. If we're eating this for breakfast, that is what we are doing." If Peyton wanted to start practice over, if he didn't 30 minutes in, if he thought guys were sloppy and didn't have their heads in it. Didn't say he did it all the time, but he would say, "Hey, that's it. Start over from scratch. We're doing this whole thing." And there was no question who ran the show there.
Yeah, that got more pronounced after Tony Dungy left. But Peyton's a powerful presence.
Well, you know, I mean.
As well, and he earned that.
Right. You could understand if.
He was able to do it. You know why? Because it worked and they won.
If Bill Belichick were to retire, right? Let's say he had a health issue and Tom Brady played 3 more years up in New England. I wouldn't be surprised to find out that Tom Brady's running a lot of what happens in practice anyway, you know, because he knows how he wants it done. He's been in that offense for 15 years.
I believe he's going to have a statue. When you have statues, you tend to...
You get that clout?
Yeah. And, again, wherever he went, he won. So, when that happens, you are allowed to run the show.
All right. Did I asked Tony this. Did I ask you about I ran a poll this week, a couple of them. I did a show on the Fantasy Channel and a show on the NFL Channel. And I ran basically the same poll, like for the long term, if you're doing a Dynasty Fantasy League or if you're starting an NFL team, because the results were very similar. I gave the choices of the young quarterbacks out there with Derek Carr being top of mind with the new contract that he signed. I included Carr. Then I included Mariota and Winston. And I included Dak Prescott because how could you not based on the season that he had last year, right? I mean, you could throw Carson Wentz in there, maybe one or two other guys as young guys with a lot of potential. How do you think that poll turned out in terms of if you're starting a franchise and building around, not we've got a great line in place or whatever, if you're starting it today, who are you taking?
How did it play out?
Yep.
I would guess Carr, Winston, Mariota, Prescott.
It went Carr by a significant margin. He was like 45% out of a 4-man poll.
That's fair right now.
Right? Mariota got second with about 25%. And by the end of the 4-hour show yesterday, Dak Prescott ahead of Jameis Winston in terms of who you'd want to start it around. I could argue for Jameis at the very top of the list. A guy called in and made a really good argument for Mariota based on his red zone proficiency. The fact that, you know, they haven't really opened up the offense for him to this point. Now they're adding pieces like Corey Davis and Eric Decker and all that.
Maybe I'm biased. I just like the way Jameis drops back and slings it.
I do, too. And there's something, though, you can make the argument if you're just looking at, look, here's what Carr has done in terms of producing touchdowns versus how many interceptions he throws and how many wins his team has produced. You have to consider the talent around him. There's no question. Jameis is still a high interception guy. He had 18 last year. Yeah. But in 2 years, they went from the worst record in the league to 6-10 to last year 9-7. You know, and it wouldn't surprise me at least if they won the NFC South this year. So,
yeah.
You know, that. But the thing is, all these guys are winning because Mariota went 9-7 basically last year in his second year, same as Winston. Carr had the Raiders in position, had the top record in the entire conference, and Dak did have the best record.
Right.
That's the guy. It really is funny. Like, did people think it's a fluke, or what is it about him? Because he came in, and certainly he's got a ground game, and that takes a lot of pressure off of him, that he's going to face eight in the box.
There's a little bit of a Russell Wilson syndrome.
Maybe.
With Dak of, well, you came in to a team that's obviously good, a great Russell had the great defense, but Dallas has the great running game in the line. There's this perception that you're a complementary piece as opposed to the piece. I don't know if that's fair, but it seems like they perceive Dak the same way, and that Russell played his way through that and continued to play at a high level to where he sort of lost that perception. And it seems like it'll take Dak time. Whereas with Jameis, perhaps because of the style, you're staying in the pocket, you're a drop back, win from the pocket guy all the time. You know, the old school guys like me like that better.
That was the order on the NFL. On the fantasy, it even surprised me more because Dak came in last in fantasy and he outscored all of them
last year.
It's insane.
I was looking, you mentioned the red zone numbers, so I got curious because I know everyone talks about Marcus Mariota in the red zone, hasn't thrown a pick yet. So I looked at those four guys in the red zone. Dak Prescott in 1 year has 16 touchdowns, 2 interceptions.
Pretty good.
Derek Carr is 19-1. In the red zone.
In his 3 years?
In his 3 years.
Okay.
Mariota was 18-0. Obviously hadn't thrown the interception in there yet.
In which year? Just 1 year?
That's his career.
That's his career is 18.
18-0.
Okay.
Jameis was 19-0.
Wow.
So, I mean, Dak is 16-2 in 1 year. You're talking about Derek Carr being 19-1. But people talk about Mariota's numbers down there, and actually Jameis is better.
That is honestly, considering how many interceptions he's thrown, that kind of blows me away a little bit, you know. But that was that's what you do hear about Mariota, how efficient he has been in the red zone. And he has been, you know.
They've all been pretty efficient.
You take any one of these guys to start your team. There's no question about it. It just surprised me how, you know, as clear cut the vote was for Derek Carr. And look, he's been good.
He just signed the contract last week.
I guess.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, he's in the news, so I'm sure that played a little bit of, he's a high-speed quarterback. He got that. So
I think if you're going to look at Dak Prescott, though, and say, look, the guy's got a great offensive line, best in football. He's got a dominant running game. Okay, right. Well, Oakland arguably had the second-best offensive line last year, and they had Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. They didn't have this dominant run game, but Latavius Murray ran for a dozen scores last year. And so he's had a good compliment. I think you're going to see Jameis take off this year. They add DeSean Jackson. They draft O.J. Howard and Chris Godwin. Cameron Brate kind of broke out last year, and we know what Mike Evans can do. He's got the best set of weapons by far that he's had to work with. So
yeah, and post with a guy like Dak, you got to give him credit for not messing it up.
At the very least.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, and that can be done from the quarterback position.
But he really, and I know you did watch him play and are aware of how well he played. He didn't just manage that team. I mean, numbers suggest, 16-2 touchdown interception ratio as a rookie. That's pretty damn good in the red zone right there. All right, when we return in a moment, interesting article on restacking the first round of the 2014 NFL draft. That, of course, is the year the Jaguars selected Blake Bortles. Here's a hint. They wouldn't be picking him again based on the way this played out. But one Jaguar did elevate himself into first-round consideration. We'll tell you
those sort of stories never are that happy.
For some teams, they are. Not so much for the Jacksonville Jaguars, at least with their first-round pick. We'll do that coming up next. You want to get in, 641-1010 is the number. It's Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday here on 1010XL.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Monday is brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, revolvers to sporting arms, and just about everything in between, semi-autos, rifles, shotguns, you name it. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the country, guaranteed. You can even trade your gold for guns at Wild West Guns and Gold. Visit guns4jax.com. That's guns, the number 4, J-A-X.com online, or stop in and see them on South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today. It's always a wild time when John Osier is in the house. Gotta love that.
Trade your guns for gold.
You can trade your gold for guns.
Gold for guns.
Actually,
okay.
I don't know.
I'm assuming you can go the other way.
I don't know, though. I'm not going to guarantee it.
Let's get somebody on.
They're probably open for discussion as far as that goes. We'll get to the 2014 redraft in a minute. Look at it. The NFL Network will unveil the order of their top 10 players in the league tomorrow night. Okay, they do the countdown. It's really gotten to the point. Does anyone pay that much attention to it anymore? It was a thing at first. You know, it was interesting, something new, and then, you know, whatever. Yeah. Maybe it's the market we're in. We don't get many guys in there. Maybe
For them, I'm sure it's good summer content.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's something to talk about. But
are you implying that there's no Jaguars on that list?
What I'm saying is when this first came out,
I'm in the top 10.
This was like a weekly staple of sports talk radio. True. Let's look at the next 10 guys that get unveiled and on and on and on. The top 10 players, and these are listed alphabetically by last name: Odell Beckham Jr., Le'Veon Bell, Tom Brady, Antonio Brown, Ezekiel Elliott, Julio Jones, Khalil Mack, Von Miller, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, coming off an MVP season. First of all, I have to ask, is this a fantasy draft? I mean, that's
right.
8 offensive skill position players right there. No linemen and only 2 defensive players on there, Khalil Mack and Von Miller. Is there anyone that strikes you as an obvious oversight on who should be on there right now? It's interesting. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott already considered one of the top 10 players in the league, and look, he led the league in rushing. I can understand that.
Yeah.
I don't know where he came in. David Johnson, to me, is not too far behind the cut of Le'Veon Bell and Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, Rodgers is on it. Brady. What are the quarterbacks?
Matt Ryan. That was it. And, he won the MVP, so it's hard to exclude him from saying he's one of the top 10 players. Yeah. In a typical year, you wouldn't see Matt Ryan in the top 10.
Right, but when you're MVP, you should probably be in the top 10.
Probably.
That
right, because you're only really basing it on recent history.
Yeah, I mean, really.
David Johnson, yeah.
We're a year removed from Cam's year.
Who's the best old lineman in the league? Tyron Smith, right? Consensus, best lineman in the league?
Probably, yeah.
He's a beast, man.
Yeah. He is. I was trying to think. They didn't have a corner in there. Is there a corner that's top 10 right now? Probably not.
Jalen Ramsey? Will be.
Could work his way into that. I mean, I don't know who would top that list. What, Patrick Peterson?
If you were drafting a team, and sometimes this is different because of position scarcity, would you take Tyron Smith over? I mean, I'd take him over Le'Veon Bell if I'm starting a team.
Yeah.
If you're starting a team, you're not probably going to start it with a running back.
Right.
Typically. That's such an important position. That's not what they're asking. They're asking who's the best at what they do.
Right. I mean, there is something to be said. I mean, somebody told me a long time ago, don't overlook guys who can get the ball in the end zone. And, Le'Veon Bell and Ezekiel Elliott are that, and that matters, even though we like to overlook it in terms of value.
That's fine. I'm just curious if anybody stood out to you. Tyron Smith might be. I mean, David Johnson, because I've been doing so many fantasy drafts that – really, the top 6 picks, 5 of them are represented in this list, with the exception of David Johnson, who is the number 1 pick in every league that gets drafted right now, because he's the safest high-end running back out there. Because, Ezekiel Elliott potentially could be looking at a suspension because of, some off-the-field stuff. It may be unlikely, but there's at least that percentage chance that happens.
Forgive my fantasy ignorance. What makes Johnson so much
better? Great receiver.
Okay.
I mean, and he's going to pile up numbers if you're in a point per reception league. He's not only going to, Bruce Arians has said this year they'd like to get him 30 touches. Now, that's an obscene number. He's not going to get that. But the fact that the coach is so adamant about he's the workhorse, never has to come off the field. He can handle this kind of workload. He's young. He's been healthy.
Okay.
And he's been dynamic in the passing game as well. I think all of it adds up, together. Anyway, just thought I'd throw that out there. All right, 2014 draft do-over. This was done a few days ago at NFL.com by Elliot Harrison, who I've mentioned this several times on the show. Elliot is a guy I know personally, and he goes back every offseason, picks a different year, and he has access to the NFL Films archives. So he works for NFL Network and NFL.com, and he'll watch an entire season from start to finish. Like, he'll watch all the week one games, and, you know, the condensed without commercials. He'll watch the film and go through every single game of a season and watch it play out in the flow of the season. It's pretty – that's a lot of work, a lot of research. Yes. You know, I have a lot of respect for his opinion is the reason I put that out there. No surprise that if the draft were held today and you could do it over, Derek Carr would be the top pick in the draft. You agree with that? Right? I mean, he's the most successful quarterback out of the class, most important position.
Yeah, I mean, he just signed to be a franchise guy.
Absolutely.
And deservedly so.
Right. So number two was Aaron Donald. And he would go to the Rams, and he did go to the Rams, but he went 13th overall, but he'd go number two here.
See, and it's funny how that works, and it's one of those things sometimes teams overthink themselves. Everybody sort of knew leading up to the draft, Derek Carr got drafted. You know, you can say, yes, you should have taken Derek Carr number one overall, but there was never a feel that Derek Carr should have been a top 10 pick at that time.
At that time, because as we discussed this yesterday, and Gil Brandt brought up the point, and we brought this up as well in relation to Derek Carr, you go back to the final bowl game, Fresno State versus USC. It was a step up in competition, and he did not play well at all. And he didn't handle pressure, and everyone's like, oh, this guy, it's great when it's wide open and he has, you know, nobody in his face, but can he handle that?
But as that draft approached, everybody was talking that Donald was going to be really good.
Right.
So,
but the question was he undersized?
Right.
Was he big? And everyone said, great player. Is he really big enough to hold up as a three-down defensive tackle
right.
in the league?
So, I mean, that's one of those where, you know, it's almost easier to criticize for not drafting Donald than for not drafting Carr based on the circumstances at the time.
Right. Yeah, Khalil Mack would go to the Jags in the redraft. You'd be okay with that. Odell Beckham would go fourth to the Bills. Devontae Freeman would go to the Raiders at fifth. I mean, Freeman's been a good player.
Yeah.
Fifth overall, you know, I mean, you could find running
Who's
backs.
Sixth?
Sixth is Jadeveon Clowney. And that's got to be more on potential still.
Yeah.
You know, he started to round into form last year a little bit. Mike Evans went seven. What's that?
Yeah, I think I would take Evans over
over Devontae Freeman.
Yeah.
Right? Small guy. I mean, he's very super productive.
Sure.
And maybe he'll always be, oh, that small guy, and you'll look
you
at the
idea
of the
you're going to get more long-term out of Evans.
And probably people thought that about Warrick Dunn. Same school, similar size, right? And yet, you know, every year you probably get discounted. C.J. Mosley to the Browns. Anthony Barr to the Vikings. And he did go to the Vikings. He might have gone in that spot, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, he went none.
Zach Martin. Went very good offensive lineman, went to the Lions in this one. Jarvis Landry was a second-round pick. He jumped up to go 11th to the Titans. Taylor Lewan to the Giants. Brandon Cooks jumps up to 13th overall. He went 20th to the Saints initially, and he would go to the Rams here. Ryan Shazier, who plays for Pittsburgh now, went to the Bears. Sammy Watkins went 15th. Sammy Watkins, great talent.
Mm-hmm.
Would he really be the 50? I mean, this guy, you talk about a guy who needs to prove he can stay healthy.
Yeah.
They did not pick up his fifth-year option
right.
on Sammy Watkins. There's no question to me, talent-wise, he's worthy of keeping around in Buffalo. It's just, is he going to be there for you on
yeah,
Sunday?
Yeah, but you feel like he needs to put together a year.
Yes.
Where he's
a complete, like a 16-game season
right.
and see what where he really stacks up. Ha ha, Clinton Dix went 21st initially. They moved him up to 16th here. And then Allen Robinson moving up from 61st overall to 17th overall, selected by the Baltimore Ravens. Despite signing Mike Wallace and drafting Breshad Perriman 2 years ago, the Ravens still need a wide receiver. This may have been written right before they signed Macklin. Robinson would give Joe Flacco a pass catcher who can run the whole route tree. Flacco would provide Robinson with more catchable balls and fewer red zone interceptions than the quarterback he currently plays with in Jacksonville. You see, it's a win-win. Let's see. Stephon Tuitt, Trey Turner, Jason Verrett, who was a first-round pick, moves up. Deion Buchanan, Jimmy Garoppolo, which is not a – I guess from 62 to 22 is a pretty good jump. Jordan Matthews, they had Jordan Matthews over Devontae Adams. I think you could debate that. Jake Matthews in there, Devontae, Timmy Jernigan, D Ford, Trent Murphy, Eric Ebron, Bradley Roby, Gabe Jackson. Gabe Jackson was a third-round pick by the Raiders. Here they're saying he's the 31st best player just several years later, which kind of goes to show you. You get a guy, even if you think the value's not there, if he turns out to be a good, solid starter for you, it's probably worth it. You know, I mean, you'd like to get superstars, and those guys help you win championships, but there are only so many of those to go around. And then Morgan Moses, the offensive tackle, who was a third-round pick by the Redskins, so they had going 32nd to the Seahawks. Obviously, Teddy Bridgewater. I guess it's with the hindsight, the way it played out, who knows where he would have had him. And Bortles did not make the top 32.
No.
No, nor did Linder, nor did Marquise Lee. But still, despite the down year, by the standard he set the previous season, Allen Robinson giving love in the top 17. Not bad.
Has Gabe Jackson been better than Brandon Linder?
I don't know if he has. I wonder if that, you know, Brandon Linder's missed some time with injuries, and that probably factors into it. And, you know,
maybe.
If you're an we're talking about Fred Taylor getting overshadowed in Jacksonville.
Sure.
Try being an interior O lineman in the last three or four years
And even beyond in Jacksonville on a team that hasn't won.
Correct.
So
they say the way he said Jackson's been dynamite enough in his young career to merit going higher in this do-over. It's hard to see him see more than a couple of guards in the first round, however. So obviously very high on how he's played. And the Raiders do have what's considered to be the best offensive line in the AFC. At least they did
last year. It's easier to pick a guy off a playoff Raiders offensive line.
It is.
Than it is to pick a guy off a 3-13 Jaguars offensive line.
Yeah, no question. But yet, like Davante Adams plays for a playoff bound team typically with the Green Bay Packers. Yet, you know, you'd recognize Allen Robinson about five or six spots ahead of him. So anyway, just, you know, a little fodder for late June in the offseason. All right, we'll come back, take a look at the fan feedback question of the day. Who the Jaguars swing and miss on in free agency? At any point in the franchise history, the one that really galled you that they got away. That is brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars Today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
You know, the Jumbo Shrimp are back home Wednesday night hosting the Mobile Bay Bears. I think they're still the Bay Bears. They were, at least years ago.
Sure. Why would you change that?
I don't know. Why would you change the Suns?
Because you got the Jumbo Shrimp.
Because you want to sell merchandise.
Yeah, and apparently they're one of the four hottest sellers. Minor league brands in the world.
The Jacksonville Callus merchandise sellers are back at home against Mobile on Wednesday night if you want to go see them, a.k.a. the Jumbo Shrimp.
Saw the Jumbo Shrimp logo at the U.S. Open.
Did you?
Yeah. I mean, it was on TV. There it was. Jumbo Shrimp.
Well, there you go. Today, we've got a four-pack of tickets. Family four-pack, we like to say. But you don't have to bring your family.
Why would you want to
bring friends. You can bring enemies. Bring whoever you like. You can bring up three other people, including yourself, to any Jumbo Shrimp home game the rest of the season. So you could take it. Take your friends to go see them play this week against Mobile or sometime later in the year. Be the fourth caller at 641-1010, and Tyler Devitt will hook you up with those tickets. How about that? That's all I got for you. What do we got? Do I need to know about this vehicle fire here, Tyler Devitt? Need-to-know info. How old is this thing right here? Not too old.
That
this
may be from a few weeks ago.
Oh, is that from a few weeks ago?
The vehicle fire, yeah. The Matthews Bridge is reopened and good to go.
Okay, good to know. Well, I saw that,
need Ed to know.
Okay, I didn't see the date on there, and I just saw it was, the previous one you had sent me, the previous message you had sent me, and good to know, everybody. It's taken a couple weeks, but we're going to be fine.
Now we know there's no vehicle.
Traffic is flowing freely on the Matthews right now. Today, we asked you, the Tom Bush family of dealerships, fan feedback question of the day, which free agent that the Jags pursued and struck out on over the years, did you want the most? Who left you holding the bag the most, Tony? What did we get on Twitter?
Here's what we got. We got Aaron said Peyton Manning with a winky face. From DC Kyle, in recent memory, Olivier Vernon. Luckily, we fixed that problem this year by signing Campbell. From Matthew, Calicio Simile and Devin McCourty. From Jag fan Alex Mack, I think he could have turned the offensive line around, given stability at Jag's most unstable spot, center. And from Matt, Alex Mack, prime of his career, Pro Bowlers solidify the line and keep Linder at guard.
Yeah, again, coming back to, I guess, what your definition of pursue and strike out is. You know, they pursued Alex Mack. He signed here. And to say Cleveland had the right to match the offer, which they did, and then they didn't pursue it. Now, you could say it's a mistake to pursue him, but I don't look at it as them striking out on Alex Mack. Maybe they struck out in terms of their plan to not go after him.
Right. His free agent was out there associated with the Jaguars they didn't get.
Correct.
So I guess that's – you wish you'd have gotten him.
You know, did they strike out on Peyton Manning, though? I mean, was it ever – was there ever a pursuit of Peyton Manning when he was a free agent? I mean – if there was, and I suppose anybody who didn't get him did strike out on him, you know, right. No matter how unlikely
that
was.
That was 11, right? Or
something like
going
that.
Going into 12. I never got any impression they went after him.
No, me either.
I think it was
probably
rather
a known thing, right? Yeah. He was headed towards what he felt was just add water type contender. Kevin Zeitler, okay? Dave Caldwell said as much that, you know, we called to gauge the interest. Price was out of our ballpark. Is that a strike? I guess it is. All right, if you want a guy, I mean, it depends on how you feel. Like to me, they struck out on Olivier Vernon.
Right.
So they offered the most money, and he still didn't sign here. Right. So you took a strong swing at it. Zeitler feels more like it was, he wants how much? Best of luck to you, son.
Right.
Right?
And that's a wish we'd have gone after him.
There are a lot of those.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Not really a strikeout.
Kelechi Osemele would be high on that list for me of guys I wish they had gone after because, you know, who knows what he could have done for the offensive line last year and how, you know, I don't know how it would have changed things this year. Maybe you would have projected him as your starting left tackle because he can play both. And maybe they don't pursue Brandon Albert in that case. Impossible to say, but definitely a guy I would have liked to have seen land here.
Vernon, to me, is the big... Again, I guess it's a strikeout. It's a, you know, that's the big one that's out there that makes sense.
I think so. Anybody you can think of historically going back into like the 90s?
Again, I mentioned Williams. That was one that seemed like they went after
everybody.
Aeneas
Williams,
first,
right.
Right. They went after Gilbert Brown, remember, and signed him. They also went after, I'm drawing a blank, and Prisco out of the top of his tongue if he was here. The linebacker who wound up signing with the Colts from A&M, Quentin Coriott, is that?
Quentin Coriott was drafted by the Colts.
Right. Yeah, they went after him, and he stayed with the Colts.
Okay.
But they signed him to one of those transition or same kind of deal, and the Colts matched it. So they didn't get him, and that was okay because he didn't turn out to be that good.
The Colts had the back-to-back top two picks,
yes.
Right? Steve Entman and Quentin Coriott, right?
I think we're going to change the franchise, and it did not.
It did not. it's funny how all it takes is one
later.
Of those top two picks if you draft Peyton Manning. Right. That can change a franchise as opposed to Entman, who is noted for his strength.
10 years, remember. So I don't remember the guys they pursued when they were fortunate enough to get Douglas and the guys you guys liked so much.
Oh, yeah.
I remember who they pursued and missed in that time, so there was probably some.
I mean, the ones they signed were the guys that missed, right? I mean,
turned out to be,
Hugh Douglas, Jerry Porter.
Was a good one, remember.
Who's the wide receiver from Dallas, who I can't think of right off the top.
LaRon Robinson.
Who,
right.
LaRon, the thing with LaRon Robinson, he looked like, to me, like a deer in headlights when he did get on the field. And then he got the concussion and a string of them. I want to say four concussions that first season, and obviously never the same. It was out of the league. Who knows? I mean, look, they take a shot on a guy who had a very small body of work at the time, had about a half of a brilliant season with the Dallas Cowboys.
10 touchdowns, I think.
Something like that, right? He was just like one of those guys, he just burst on the scene, couldn't be covered for half a season. And you know, so they signed him at the time. What was a big money deal? Now you'd look at him, you'd be like, "That's not that big a money deal." Yeah. But economics change, and then he just never quite looked the part when he got here. And then the concussions obviously derailed that. Jerry Porter was in a, you know, not that Jerry Porter was a huge top of the charts type free agent, but at the time, that's how desperate they were for wide receiver help.
Right.
That you thought, all right, here's a guy who I think may have had one double-digit touchdown season, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had a big Sunday night game where he burned Champ Bailey for like three touchdowns, and he made his career off that game.
Yeah, I'm looking at a couple lists of like the all-time free agents to see if anything jogs the memory, you know, if the Jags went after this guy or that guy. I don't see much. A lot of it's kind of pre-Jaguar stuff, like Reggie White's number one on this list. Obviously, they never really had a shot at that
they
guy.
They did not, no.
Drew Brees, number two. I don't remember them in on that. Peyton Manning, three.
What was the timetable for Brees signing with the...
06.
Was it 06?
Yeah.
Boy.
Yeah. Deion Sanders.
That guy.
That was before the Jags. That was 94, 95 when he was in free agent. He was free agent again going to Baltimore.
He's free agent now, too.
Yeah.
Deion was just a mercenary at that point, wasn't he? Just signing those one-year deals.
Kurt Warner with Arizona in 2005. Charles Woodson, 2006.
You can not really fault him for Kurt Warner, right? He looked like he was done.
Yeah, but it's like I can't even remember the Jags being talked at. It's not like they swung at any of these. I can't see any of these where they swung. It's Curtis Martin, Rich Gannon, Shannon Sharp, Rod Woodson, Kevin Mawai, Mike Vrabel, Priest Holmes, Keenan McCardell. They landed.
Yes!
It's 14 on this job, list.
Keenan?
James Ferrier, Ed McCaffrey, Michael Turner in 2008. Bryce Pop going to the Bills in 95 was a great signing. He signed somewhere else later that didn't turn out so well.
Didn't work out quite as much. When you play him in a different system, that made him Defensive Player of the Year, that tends to happen sometimes.
Simeon Rice.
Yeah,
Reggie White.
Exactly. That helps too.
And Bruce Smith.
But he was, but right, an opposite Bruce Smith. But they did use him. Didn't know what was it? They used him more as was he a 3-4 outside linebacker?
Yeah.
When he was in Buffalo, and then they tried to make him a down lineman. Yeah. I think was.
But
what
Simeon
it was.
Rice and Jerry Rice top out this list. Or
you ever Lamb ever tell you David Lamb ever tell you about his relationship with Bryce Paul back in the day?
No.
They didn't see eye to eye on much. Let's just leave it at that. I think Lamb may have feared for his physical safety in the hallways of what was Alltel Stadium at the time. A guy, look, if you ever fear for your physical safety, if Lamb was fearful, should have called his partner at the time, Joe C. Say, hey.
That's right.
Let's bring the stash in here. Let's get the goatee going. Joe C., what's up, brother? How are you, man?
What is happening? I do remember that story, and it was kind of funny because Lamb, and, you know, Lamb is he's not known to embellish, right?
Oh, he may be, yeah. But it was a great story, nonetheless. Lamb was like, there was nobody else in the hallway, in the tunnels, right, underneath the bowels of the stadium. And he's like, he could have killed me and just dumped my body right there, and nobody would have known who did.
I say that Dave's not known to embellish with tongue firmly planted in cheek.
I knew you did.
He said with his peripheral vision and getting around that noggin, you got to have a lot of peripheral vision. But he said he believes that maybe Bryce Pop lifted his right arm with the helmet in his hand and was about to strike a blow as David turned around, and then he saw the helmet go back down. So I don't know whether that, in fact, happened, but that's the way Lamb described
it. It's a good story, though, right?
Great story.
Because, is there a guy? Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was going to say it's a great story because Bryce Pop at that point was the epitome of a bust. And that's when you were close to having something special happen with his football team. And that was a guy that they went and got. He perhaps made a living off of other guys on the opposite side, a la Reggie White and Bruce Smith, and came here and they tried to change the way he was playing the game, and he wasn't very good.
That's right. Wasn't a good fit, but it wasn't exactly like, you know, he kind of had that Hugh Douglas attitude while he was here as well. I think he wanted to do better. I think he actually wanted to try, unlike Hugh Douglas, who took a nice one-year vacation down in sunny Florida. Yeah. Is there a guy they swung and missed on, Joe, that stands out to you, free agent-wise, that they made a run at that they were unable to land? Because they certainly landed some duds.
Yeah, the ones that you wonder what they would have been, the guys that they were unable to land, I guess I would have to say Alex Mack is one that jumps to mind because of the fact that he was part of that. He was a centerpiece for the Atlanta Falcons just a couple of years after Jacksonville made the run. They thought he had a good contract offer. They thought it was one that that Cleveland would decide not to match, and ultimately Alex Mack never came here. So I would say that was a good one. I don't know that it would have fixed a lot of the other ills, but still, he was a very good player, and they missed on him.
Would have helped. Would have helped. What do you have coming up today on Midday Chalk?
Gosh, we're definitely going to talk a little Jaguar football, some stuff from over the weekend, baseball with what Cody Bellinger's doing, and Aaron Judge has been pretty spectacular. The Dodgers and Bellinger are good. The Yankees are not, but Judge is. But then also, the most incredible shot from Jordan Spieth to win the Travelers Championship. The PGA Tour doesn't necessarily get coverage on morning shows around the country on a Monday after a tournament, but in this case they did because Spieth hit one hell of a shot, and he's doing stuff that only Tiger Woods has done at his young age, which is pretty special.
Did I just hear you say the first place Yankees are not doing well? I know they've lost them lately, but yeah. they're the first place, Joe, New York Yankees. First place.
I can't slide it by you, can I?
Thanks, sir.
They brought a lot of others into the equation.
Look, 2-8 in their last 10. I hear what you're saying, brother. Yeah. But that shows you what kind of start they're off to. All right. Hey, listen, we'll be listening for the Midday Chalk. Have a great show today.
All right, fellas. Enjoy.
All right. There he goes. David Lamb's personal bodyguard for many, many years back in the day. all right. That will about do it for us here on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Oj, what do you got coming
Very
up?
Very little.
Very little?
I know what you're going to ask.
What do you got coming up at Jaguars.com? Mailbag?
Ozone mailbag every day, and beyond that, we'll be taking a look at the rookie class a little bit this week.
Who'd you take now? Carr or Bortles, huh? Who'd you
take? I'd probably take Carr.
I keep up with the mailbag. John Osier from Jaguars.com. Thanks for stopping in.
All right, guys.
All right, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, welcome back, Tyler, and for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping things up here at Everbank. That does it for Jaguars today. Back at it tomorrow morning from 10 to noon right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Folks, Mike Dempsey here for my friends at Dandy Sandwiches and Subs. Still a little time left, about a week left in the month of June for you to enjoy the ultimate Italian at a special sandwich of the month price at Area Circle K's. Capicola ham, Genoa salami, pepperoni, mozzarella, all piled high on a Parmesan roll, and you can get it all for $3.99, an absolute steal of a deal. But it's only good at that price at Area Circle K's for the rest of the month of June. So get out and enjoy. And if that's not your flavor, how about the Boom Boom Chicken? All white meat chicken strips, Boom Boom sauce, pepper jack cheese on a locally fresh-baked Parmesan sub roll. Maybe you want to go old school with the ham and cheese twist. Or if you're really hungry, try the City Block Cheeseburger, a third-pound char-grilled beef patty with cheddar cheese, Swiss cheese, a little mustard blend, and pickles. And they serve it on a rustic onion ciabatta square. Absolutely delicious and a meal that will fill you up for the rest of the day. So whenever it's food on the go that you're looking for, no matter the variety, you're going to find it with Dandy. Go out and make yours a Dandy and do it today.
You guys have a good day. Peace.